Tonight, it is my pleasure to introduce Ken. Go ahead.
Oh, thanks very much, Paulette. I'm Ken. I'm an addict and I'm clean today, which is the way that I was taught to introduce myself in Melbourne in Australia, where I did most of my time in recovery. Just to explain a little bit of geography, Tasmania is an island at the bottom part of Australia, and Melbourne is in Victoria, the state of Victoria, which is the most southern state, just to the It's like 150 kilometers north of Tasmania across an ocean. And I grew up in Tasmania, and I moved to Melbourne to go specifically to NA. So but I'll just give a little bit. I've done some notes because I'm not very good at strategic thinking, especially when I'm anxious, which is now and has been a lot of my life. That's one of my major problems is anxiety. But anyway, look, I grew up in a very normal, I suppose it was a normal family. My old man was an engineer. My mum was a mum. I had four sisters. We were, quite a large family, and everything was, there was no major sort of traumatic events or anything. We'd go off on holidays, and I'd go fishing with my dad, and it was a pretty normal kind of life, I guess, up until my early teens. And I'm just going to touch on this very briefly. I'm not going to focus on it, but when I was about 13, I was my parents were groomed, and I was separated from them by this creep, and I was sexually abused over a period of time by this guy in the context of a bushwalking club. It was a kind of very, very bizarre event, which I never disclosed or did any work on for decades. Do you know what I mean? I just sat on it. I never told anybody. And look, I think it is a kind of a fundamental aspect of my personality, which I think perhaps predisposed me to the way that I responded to alcohol and other drugs when I was when I finally got them, I didn't do that well in school. I think that experience kind of upset my operating system, and made my it affected my thinking, if you like, my capacity to process and think strategically and stay focused. And I still think that I'm affected by that to this day. And here they call it matriculation. So you do 10 years up to year 10 in high school, and then you do a couple of years matriculation. It's like pre-university. And in those years, I drank. I was in a hockey team, we used to always drink. And I was the sort of champion. Certainly the most thirsty drinker in the crew. And I had blackouts in my drinking experience very early on. And I was the bigger kid, so I'd be in the back of the ta I'd be in the taxi going down to the bottle shop, when I was 16, to get alcohol. I think it was 18 was the legal age to buy alcohol. Anyway, so and when I hit matriculation level, I started smoking pot, started getting involved with girls and stuff, and it was all very confusing. It was all very I didn't respond that well to all of those things, to which some people just sort of naturally move into. And I went to university. It was bizarre, it was really bizarre. Like, it was very misguided, and I should have, my actual trajectory should have been, I went to university, I became a geologist, and got married and had a family and lived happily ever after, but that wasn't the way it worked out. I did enroll in a geology degree, and I lasted maybe 6 months, and I ended up in a psych ward, and that was the first psychiatric admission that I had. And I think that was where I was first exposed to AA. They actually had AA meetings they would come in, and we would go. And I can remember once I left there, I can remember being back at the pub, and I'd be drinking, and I'd say, "Oh, my name's Ken, and I'm an alcoholic." You know, I thought I made a bit of a joke out of it. Anyway, look, I got into a lot of magic mushrooms and acid and all sorts of stupid, crazy shit back then. And over the next 10 years or so, I'll cut to the chase because it's a bit boring, all this stuff. But I ended up being hospitalized 4 times in psych wards. You know, in a modern context, I would have ended up in a proper rehab, you know, for addiction treatment. But I ended up back where I grew up in little old backwater Tasmania. You know, it was psych in there with the psych wards, you know, with other people with I nearly said genuine mental problems, but I certainly had a genuine mental problem. You know, I was really in strife at an early age in my life, and eventually I moved to Melbourne because I found out about Narcotics Anonymous, and there was bugger all Narcotics Anonymous in Tasmania where I grew up. There was little AA meetings, and I started going to those. But I actually moved over to Melbourne. Which is a much, much bigger city than anything in Tasmania, a city of 3 million people, and the NA were there was quite strong, and so I got clean over there, and that was, you know, I gradually got a bit more confidence and started to do service in NA, and you know, at the group level, and eventually I did, public information. I did H and I did a lot of prison stuff in prisons. I used to go to the area meetings and all that stuff. And I stayed clean. You know, I stayed clean. I went to a world convention in Chicago. It was my first trip to America back in. Oh, look, I'm not. I think it was 2015 or something like that. It was, and that was a bit of an eye opener. But you know, seeing all these. You know, we had the main meeting on a Saturday night, and there was just this huge stadium full of people, and I actually got up on stage on behalf of the Australian region, and it was some sort of anniversary or birthday of NA, you know, and I got actually got up on stage and said happy birthday NA from Australia or something stupid, mate, you know, I did some stupid Australian accent, whatever. And I traveled around America a bit. So that was when I first really encountered the religiosity, you know, the very, very open religiosity within certain NA meetings in America. It's not quite like that in Australia, you know, it's there. And there's a constant, you know, there's a sort of an acceptance, almost an expectation that people will use words like God and thank their higher power and all that sort of stuff, you know. But in America, I really saw the extreme edge of that. And anyway, what else have I got to say? Look, I had a sponsor. I got a sponsor early on in the piece, and one of my dogs disappeared. This beautiful dog I had named Packy. He went missing, and for the first time in my recovery, I was inconsolable and crying and couldn't go to work, and that gave me the courage. You know, often these sorts of traumatic or extremely difficult experiences provide motivation, and that provided me with the impetus to get a sponsor. And I got this wonderful guy, John C. He's one of the guys on the recordings, and wonderful Scottish guy, or well, he's Scottish Australian. You know, he's a Marxist and an atheist, and he was just the right guy, you know. But so he was my sponsor for 34 years, and I never did much step work. This is where some people ask, why is it that I haven't done this? You know, this meeting, the reason we ask speakers to kind of try and focus a little bit on the dilemma and the solution to being a secular or non-religious person, and being asked to do this process, which is sort of religious at its fundamental core, you know, or in its origins, shall we say, in its backstory. And I don't know whether I think it was a combination of that and some of that stuff that I mentioned with my operating system. And I find it very difficult to write or to stay focused. And also there's something about doing what everybody else does. There's something about this conformity thing that really, and it's ridiculous. Because I hear, I've been inspired by people who are working the steps throughout my recovery. You know, they've been the people who've led by example, and but I still haven't really got to a point, and I don't think I ever will now. I'm kind of resolved that that it's not really something that I'm very good at or that I find very easy. What else? I've recently started. I've had this book. I know you shouldn't promote other things. You know this. I'll just sneak it in there out of the side. Staying Sober Without God by Geoffrey Martin. I've recently started reading that book with a new with an and trying to read whole chapters and stuff and reread them and I'm finding his what he calls it the practical 12 steps, and I'm finding that it actually agrees a great deal with my the way that I interpret the process, and so even though I still don't write to any great extent, I don't write about myself, about my experience, or daily. You know, there's some suggestion with a 10th step that you write daily. Well, look, I've never really liked writing. You know, even though I'm a good writer, you know, but it's not about writing a fictional story when it comes to you when you're the subject matter. So look, I don't write. I went and saw. I went to my sponsor's place for years and years and years. You know, dog ate my homework. All that sort of stuff, and eventually I just arrived at a position where I decided that I'm going to just let myself off the hook with that. I've been clean since in November it'll be 38 years, and I think that it's okay to let myself off the hook and not to be shut, not to be ashamed, or not to be I have a legit my story is legitimate, in spite of it being perhaps an outlier, and I don't wish to be an excuse for other people to say, oh well, you know he doesn't, Ken doesn't do the steps or whatever, you know. Like, I think it's something that's really good to focus on and to have a go at and to talk to other people about. But I don't think there's any sort of necessary level of achievement or compliance, you know, apart from staying clean and trying to be a better person and trying to overcome, these, it was mentioned in that reading, self-destructive patterns of behavior, you know, and, like isolating, acting out in other ways that aren't healthy, overeating, undereating, whatever it is. There's so many different ways that I can be, that I can neglect myself, you know. And also, I guess one of those is also to not look at myself, to not look at the difficult parts of my past and my present and my future, you know, because there, you know, I still hope to have a maybe another couple of decades to go. I'm not sure. I'm reasonably healthy. Maybe a decade might be. I don't know. I've been visiting my poor old mum who's 95, and she's in an aged care facility, and she's got sort of dementia happening and all that, and I'm not sure that I want to live to be 95, you know. But I do want to have quality of life, you know, and my engagement with Narcotics Anonymous, and particularly, look, I haven't referenced Secular NA. Secular NA has been, and I don't wish to blow my own trumpet, you know what I mean? But I helped to some extent get this thing start going, and some of you might remember Paulette and Anne, who's not here today. They both turned up at this the first secular AA convention in Santa Monica in 2014, and I met Paulette and Anne, and we were the only NA people there that had gone there for this very reason, because we yearned for a secular space for people in recovery in Narcotics Anonymous, and so it's really become my project. It's you know if there's anything that I've done that's worthwhile in this life, it's be one of the people who have helped to establish this community, if you like, this movement within a movement, you know. And like, I really love NA. I don't have any any qualms about saying that, you know, but I don't need to be exposed to people using religious language. I really don't. I no longer need to be exposed to that, to any great extent. You know, I still get inspired by. I'll be inspired by anybody, you know. So look, the things that I do these days is I try very hard to look after myself, and I monitor my pain. You know, I'm 60. I've had back issues, and I've had, you know, a few other things, and so I monitor my pain. I'm very, very I have a very good relationship with my doctor. I exercise re regularly. I'm doing some volunteer work. I help deliver a pain management course that's delivered by Taz Health, and so I do these 6-week seminars with people, and help teach people how to live with chronic or persistent pain. I'm working with an organization called Laurel House, which is a an organization for victim survivors of sexual abuse, and we're working to get a men's support group together. So this sort of stuff, you know, I'm doing the things that I really love, you know, that I really need to do. Like I need to do that because I need to address that aspect of my life outside of Narcotics Anonymous meetings, because I know that it is it's not relevant to everybody, and it's perhaps also triggering to others who might have similar experiences. And that thing where they say, you know, the therapeutic value of one addict helping another is without parallel. Well, look, like so many things in NA, in the NA literature, I totally disagree. You know, there are lots of things that are very similar to the therapeutic value of one addict helping another, and one of them is the therapeutic value of survivors. When I talk to somebody who has that backstory, there's something very, very different, and very powerful, you know. Just as when I talk to an addict, you know. So yeah. So look, I'm that's about as much as I need to say, really. I'm still not very good at social stuff, you know, big social events. In a way, I'm kind of grateful to the Zoom platform, you know, because I find it easier than actually going to physical meetings and being around people, although I do miss that, you know. I don't know what else to say. If you're up in the middle of the night, come to one of the Australian meetings. You know, I've started thinking we should call some of them Good Morning America, you know, because we get all the people at 5 o'clock in the morning. But anyway, look, the service that I've done and I continue to do in secular NA has really been the new motivator in my life over the last, goodness, what is it? 2015, we started Beyond Belief in Melbourne and with Anthony. I work with Anthony to get that started. So, you know, we've been going for 10 years, you know. So, it's brilliant. It's brilliant. And I'm just waffling now. I'm getting to the waffle stage. And I'm pretty close to the 20 minutes. I'm a minute off the 20 minutes. So look, I think I'll wind it up there. I'd really like to thank this group. This group is a really special feature of my whole week. And I don't have to do anything on Saturday if I do this group. You know, this actually gets me through. And so I always find it quite exhausting, whether I'm chairing or even just attending these groups. I find it quite emotionally exhausting, but I really, really get a lot from it, and I'm really grateful to all of the people who come regularly to this meeting, who I consider to be some of the best friends that I've ever established in my life. So thank you very much.